going to need a new shirt. Hi, it's Phil. It's June 9th, 2017, and this is episode 321 of Phil Hewlett and Friends.
Seriously?
Yeah, 321. Co-hosting with me today, you just heard her voice, longtime, venerable, and trusted radio news lady, Terry Rae Elmer.
Good morning. I love how you come up with a different intro every time.
And what can I say? Sports anchorman, first-timer here on the program. He's at KOAA-TV Colorado Springs, Matt Pritchard. Hey, Matt.
Hey, good morning, Phil.
Today, we have a ton of stories to talk about, as usual, and we have guests. In fact, we have Kevin Kelly. Do you know who that is? He does TED Talks. He's totally wired into the technology world, and coincidentally, he's the co-founder of Wired Magazine. And I believe in his new book, The Inevitable, he talks about how we're all going to die thanks to technology.
Yes.
And then Manny the Movie Guy is going to review the beginning of the end of Tom Cruise's movie career with the movie Mummy. And let's see, our travel dude, Gary Warner, is going to come on. And in light of the terror attacks in London and Manchester, he's going to talk about, believe it or not, traveling to Britain.
Or not.
And he has some thoughts on that, and so we'll see what he says. And Heather Wagenhals, you've seen her on TV a lot. She talks about financial wealth, and she knows all things financial. She's going to talk about leveraging the power of LinkedIn, password roulette, and cracking the real estate code. Those are her topics today, and we have a bunch of stories as well. And I want to talk to you about my shirt. But
what's with the shirt, Phil?
You're going to have to wait just a second, because when you shop
this shirt,
when you shop online,
the one with the stain on the front?
Come on.
That shirt?
That one. When you shop online is what I'm trying to say. You can make money shopping online. And I do this. Do you do this?
Shop online?
When I buy a new shirt to replace this shirt, I'm going to make money.
Okay.
Through Ebates. Ebates partners with just about every online retailer that you love out there. And then if you're an Ebates member, you buy a shirt or whatever you buy online. You're always buying stuff online. You get 5, 10, 15, sometimes 20% cash back from Ebates. It's simple. And I'll tell you what, I'll make it even easier for you. If you go to our website, philhewlettandfriends.com, click on the Ebates button on the sponsors page, you will get a $10 bonus instantly if you sign up on our page, on our website. You won't get that $10 bonus elsewhere. So go do that, and hey, thank me later for the 10 bucks. And use Ebates when you shop. You'll get money back.
The way he's sitting, did you notice you can't see the spot on the front of his shirt from
now,
the seat?
Yeah. It's funny, you know, we have, as a society here in America, this is a first world problem. We've gone away from just having the little sweaty cake of soap next to the faucet at our sink in the bathroom, right? Where
right.
It makes a nice
right.
pool of soap fluid. So what we decided to do is collect all that fluid and put it in a jar with a decorative handle and a top and a squirt button, right?
Right.
We have soap in a bottle now. And that's what we have in all of our rooms. And the problem with that, as decorative and nice as they look and tidy, and you don't have that little soap goo on your sink anymore, the soap kind of gums up the end of the squirt part of the squirt
okay.
bottle, right? And so today I went to wash my hands, you know, before coming here, and I pumped the top of the squirt bottle, and rather than it just, you know, out onto my hand, it shot parallel, straight at me, a straight line.
So that's not coffee that you spilled on the journey up here. That's,
well, you know, it so. Looks, I mean, I don't want to have to try to explain, like, liquid stains between my belly button and my crotch on my shirt. It's
fair
just,
enough.
It's an awkward thing to describe. And so, you know, I'm at the moment upset with squirt bottle soap technology.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's got to fix that. All right. So, as we move on, and we'll get you guys to comment on whatever you want to comment now. But in the news, I saw this morning. The there's a big movement from animal rights folks who want to kind of equalize the playing field between humans and what, T-Ray, hamsters?
Humans and hamsters. No, humans and chimpanzees.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, when you're exactly right about that. And when I read about that stuff... It's really difficult for me because, as you know, I was raised on a farm.
Yeah.
And cows have been domesticated for hundreds and hundreds of years. If the people who want this to happen went to my dad's farm and turned all the cows loose, they would die.
That's right. They can't live without us.
No.
But chimps can live without us.
Yeah, that's another story. Kiko, Tommy, and other chimpanzees don't have the legal rights of human beings, and they're much cuter than cows, I'm just saying. New York Appeals Court ruled Thursday in a case that wanted to give the animals protection. The court upheld a lower court ruling that denied habeas corpus for Kiko and Tommy. They are two 30-somethings who used to be performing animals and now live in a primate sanctuary in Niagara Falls. The Non-Human Rights Project, as it's called, alleges that the sanctuary is actually a private home. Tommy is alleged to live in a cement and steel cage behind a trailer park in Gloversville, New York. Neither location is considered a natural habitat.
Oh, so they don't want them living in a cage of any size, is
right.
That the thing?
Yeah. Right. So the Chief Justice agreed that chimps and humans share many behavioral, cognitive, and social abilities, but those do not translate to a chimpanzee's capacity or ability, like humans, to bear legal duties. Then there's a cute picture of the chimpanzees wearing clothes.
To try to break your heart and come to
best
the
part of the article.
Yeah, come to the other side.
Yeah, the chimpanzees in the outfit.
I did read recently that that chimps are evolving and they're becoming more like us. And they're starting to show more behaviors, like using tools and that sort of thing, that are signs of the type of intelligence that we've acquired over time and are squandering in many cases. And so, I don't know, not in our lifetime, but maybe there's going to be Planet of the Apes in about, 100,000 years.
Well, the non-human rights, the article doesn't say exactly what they wanted to do with the chimpanzees. And they put out a statement saying, the fight has begun. We are confident that Tommy and Kiko's fundamental right to bodily liberty will be recognized as a matter of justice.
Yeah. I don't know. If they may be going about it the wrong way because, we humans establish the courts to protect we humans and establish, order for we humans. It's our court. It's not the animals' court. So why don't they just say, hey, get those chimps out of that cage, you people, rather than taking it to the court?
And then every time I hear one of these stories, also I remember the lady that got her face ripped off. There's always that.
That's right.
Right.
You never know when they're going to go. Like,
you said they're getting more like humans, Phil.
Right. Certain types of dogs, too, right?
Right.
My dog's docile. He's lovely. Yeah, but he's one of those breeds that could... No, he's not going to snap.
Are you
then,
like me?
Then
I,
the next thing you know...
Thing.
Yeah.
I get calls and letters.
Well,
they're evil. They're nice dogs.
Yeah.
But they're not.
My daughter has Belgian Malinois.
I know. Those are police dogs.
Police dog,
yeah.
It's very protective. It's very alert. And anything it sees moving, it wants to kill.
They have them at LAX for drug sniffing.
Yeah.
A lot of them.
But, if she knows you.
You're okay.
We're fine. But see, if I leave the room and come back, there's a moment where I'm...
She forgot who you are.
I'm an intruder. And then I have to,
reacquaint yourself.
But then if she doesn't feel comfortable about you, I mean, just the... drooling, just the scary bark and the teeth, and it's like
they're supposed to be really, really smart, those dogs.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Smart dog. Beautiful dog too.
Smart dog because she thinks you're a crook.
Well, smarter than some humans. And some of the smartest guys are in the seat of power, aren't they, Matt? And they aspire to be in charge of all things political and be the overlords. Of we who have to do whatever the government says, right? And not just here in America, but in England. Tell me about this guy that stood a pretty good chance of making his way into Parliament there in England, Matt.
In Parliament, overlord was the right word as well. Lord Buckethead is his name, standing against Theresa May over there in jolly old London. And... essentially, he has been a political figure in Great Britain for decades now, going back to the 80s, where he would put a bucket on his head, sort of a tall cylinder-like black bucket, and he's standing next to all of these political figures, and he's dead serious, and he's now taken to Twitter as well. He's come into the year 2017 and is getting his message out to the people of Great Britain and the world, and... And the photos are just fantastic. They really are. The costume, just standing next to all the Yeah. Suits. He has a cape. He has the Dracula hood. He's got everything going on. I you know, Buckethead 2020 here in U.S. That's all I'm saying.
I looked it up, and he says that he is an intergalactic space lord.
Oh,
yes. Right, from another world.
Well, is he Labor? Is he conservative? Is he one of these other like minor parties, or does he just have his own party?
I think he may have his own party. I think you know, he's bringing his intergalactic politics to our world, you know, trying to just shake things up. You know, they've been watching from up above and seeing how we've been messing things up, and here they are to fix things.
Yeah, all right, good. And by the way, today is the day that in London, in Britain, Theresa May, who's the prime minister, she was trying to cement her power there in Parliament.
She's kind of like the British version of Trump.
Right, yeah.
Or is that the French one?
It's politically, in terms of, I don't know if you want to say isolationist.
Yes,
it's
yes,
along
yes.
the same lines. Nationalist, there you go. She wants to, you know, get out of the EU, and she favors the Brexit and all of that. I think Brexit is still in progress. It hasn't really...
Yes.
been solidified, but she's in favor of all of that, and then there's a lot of people who are not in favor of it, but just the same, they get the chance to call new elections at their whim to solidify
yeah,
their
political
power.
Yeah, because this was 3 years early, right?
Right. Yeah, and so they did this, and then all of a sudden the polls started changing, and a bunch of women who were running, who were against Theresa May's position, were winning their spots in the Labour Party. And it ended up being, with the UK seats in Parliament, ended up being a hung Parliament. And so now Theresa May is forced to form a coalition government rather than having one that was majority conservative. So there you go. That's in the news. We cover the news here, too, the serious stuff every
sometimes.
Now and then. Every now and then. But we do have the more important stuff. In Florida, a woman... She knew she was pregnant, by the way. She knew she was pregnant. Sometimes the stories out of Florida are women who give birth who didn't know they were pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Very often that's the story. But mm-hmm. she knew her stomach was just bigger than what her friends' stomachs looked like. And she approached the end of her pregnancy, and she didn't know how big her baby girl, Carly, she knew she was having a baby, so it wasn't a tumor. Was that what you were worried about?
Yes.
You thought there was a watermelon-sized tumor?
No, I thought it was a story I read last night where the woman was drinking 3 bottles of wine a day, and her stomach looked like she was pregnant.
Oh, my gosh.
Go on.
What was in there? Cheese?
Wine.
Wine and cheese. Anyway, the baby girl, Carly, arrived via C-section. And she weighed in at 13 pounds,
oh
5
God.
Ounces.
Whoa. Oh, jeez.
Average baby is between 6 and 8 pounds.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. C-section is right. Yeah.
Did she have a C-section? Because else she'd be like squeezing
yeah,
out a toddler.
C-section. Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's her quote. It looked like they pulled a toddler out of my belly.
See?
Yeah.
A record you never wanted to break.
Yeah, so when you're shopping for clothing, is that, what is that, T2, T3, T1? You know, they have the clothing sizes
right.
for the babies?
Yes.
Is that...
I'm thinking they started him right out in the toddler sizes.
Yeah.
save you some money, not have to go through all those early phases.
Yeah.
Straight to toddler.
Right.
I don't even want to talk about changing that baby's diapers.
I'm curious. Oof. Here's something for you guys. I'm kind of a car guy. I like cars. I've always liked cars.
Then why are you driving a Prius?
Yeah, that's the thing. I've had some nice cars over time.
Just saying.
But I'm driving a Prius.
You are.
And I call it the stupid Prius, so that I could be in the diamond lane, the HOV lane, the lane that they let you drive if
so
you have more than one passenger.
You're not worried about greenhouse gases?
Yeah, I could care less about that. Really, I could care less. You know, there's people making money off it. You know, Al Gore is making like $1 million a day off of carbon trading.
Elon Musk.
Yeah, right. All of these guys. It's all a I don't know if it's all a scam. Certainly the world is getting hotter, but it's getting colder in other places, and people ignore that. So I don't know what to think. I'm not a scientist, so don't come down on me for this. But the thing I want to say is that not only is, in my opinion, Toyota making the ugliest cars on the planet right now, and they have some beautiful cars. They're Lexi.
Not, not the Prius, though.
The Prius is ugly. And that new car, the new Prius is uglier than the old Prius. And the new car, the hydrogen car, the Mirai, Have you seen those?
It's ugly.
It's just, yeah. What do they think? Why do the cars have to look like they're running on alternative
fuel?
Well,
that little BMW is ugly as sin, too.
Yeah, why did BMW
remember the Pontiac Aztec?
Yes.
They kind of look like those.
I rented one of those once.
Did you really?
And I felt like I was driving around in a bubble. Anyway, the ugly cars. Why don't they just make beautiful cars that run on alternative fuel? And people know they run on alternative fuel. Like the Audi electric hybrid is
a
beautiful
car.
Sure. Or excluding Tesla as well, yeah.
Well, yeah, the Tesla's obvious. That's beautiful.
That's a given.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But, you know, once companies realize that folks like a pretty car, you know,
right.
or a mean car. So I get this Prius so I can drive in the Diamond Lane by myself. Okay? It's a selfish thing.
So you got the sticker thing on
it. I have the stickers in the state of California if you get a car that qualifies.
So you don't actually ever plug the car in or anything?
No. It's the only reason they sold the car to me,
the
plug-in, is because the government gives the Toyota dealer credits for every
right.
Prius they sell. They could sell two SUVs where they make money.
Well, I told you when I bought the Fiat, they wanted to sell it an electric one, but it only got 110 miles.
Well, this one only gets 12 on a charge. Anyway, I have to believe that some people believe that when they're on the freeway, and that's what we call them here in California, the freeways, that if they have more than one person in their car, that they're required to get in the Diamond Lane and then drive. I think some people believe that. And then they drive a couple miles slower than the posted speed limit. And the reason here's the real reason that I believe people get in the Diamond Lane is because they want to get somewhere quicker than the folks who are stuck in the mainline lanes. And by that, I mean...
Don't you love when those... Oh, no, you drive one. I was going to say, don't you love when the Diamond Lane backs up? But no, you don't.
No, I don't. There's the flow of traffic in the main lanes, and there's the flow of traffic in the Diamond Lane. And the flow of traffic very often is 80-plus miles per hour in the Diamond Lane. And so the rule of thumb, folks, if you get in the Diamond Lane, please try to drive faster than the folks who are in the mainline lane, because that's why we're in the Diamond Lane. So when the guy who's in the steak bed truck... with his lawnmowers.
We don't care about you and your stupid
diamond lane,
Phil.
You don't? You know, honestly, why don't we just make them all lanes for everybody? That's what I would rather it be. Just make the freeway wider and let everybody be
I have a friend who you know who drives all the time in a big, giant SUV in the Diamond Lane.
By himself?
By himself.
Okay, and he just...
doesn't care.
Pull me over. I'll pay the $350.
Knock
bucks.
Yourself out.
Yeah. I think I know who you're talking about.
I bet you do.
Yeah. All right.
Tint out the windows and you'll be fine.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Later on the program, by the way, we'll play Somebody Died, Try Not to Laugh. Later in the program, we're going to play that game.
Okay.
You ready? You up for that? We're not going to do it now, but we'll play that. And does this make you feel old? Michael J. Fox is 56 and Johnny Depp is 54.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. But
and how old is Tom Cruise? I know we're going to talk about him later, but seriously,
he's got to be 60,
don't you think?
Right.
Well, I can look that up.
Yeah, look it up. When did
I'm the fastest?
When did that?
If they got him at 54.
54.
Yep.
All right. Well, this will make you feel better, Matt. In case you were feeling old, because I know you're not. You're the young guy in the room.
Not yet. Not yet.
You could still have a May-December relationship with Natalie Portman. She's 36. And that's, what is that, 12 years your senior?
11. If she's 36, then yeah, 11.
Now, a little about you, Matt. Are you married?
Are you out
engaged?
Of college?
Are you?
I am, yeah. I'm married, yeah. And I met her along my broadcast travels. 5 years out of school, 5 years in the business. Grew up in Southern California, there in Laguna Niguel. I know, very, very, very hoity-toity.
Yeah.
Even though we all drove Hondas and, you know, Civics. Okay. We were the poor family of Laguna Niguel.
Yeah.
No Priuses, huh?
No Priuses. all Hondas. And, you know, I was parking in a high school parking lot with Beamers left and right. But maybe one day I'll earn my own Beamer.
Yeah, I think so. You keep it up.
The ugly one, okay?
All right. So
I'll try not to.
So you're just a pup, and you're in Colorado Springs, so that's good. Here's one way. I've always wondered, how do people make money on hashtags? Marielle Joachim founded the company Happily Ever Hashtagged after being asked by friends to come up with personalized hashtags for their weddings. And now, and she's here in the Los Angeles area where we are, now... She is swamped with orders. She charges $40 for a single hashtag, a customized hashtag, $85 for three of them. And this is if you're getting married and you want hashtags.
My niece did that.
Media.
She's getting married next month. Yes.
So
we did that too.
She has around 150 customers at any given moment, paying her $40 to $85.
Couldn't you come up with it by yourself?
That's what I think. I mean, I just polled the newsroom with everybody, and we came up with five or six and then whittled it down. It was a free and easy way of doing it.
Well, yeah. I don't know. My niece's is really pedestrian then. It just says Finn Farnsworth wedding.
Yeah. Go simple. Yeah.
Finn Farnsworth. Oh, gosh. You know what? A simple way to enjoy yourself. In a moment, we're going to talk about how robots are going to kill us when they get smarter. That's coming up in just a moment with the co-founder of Wired magazine. But if you want a simple yet spectacular dining experience and you're in the Southern California area, I want you to come over to where our studio is, because just about 15 steps from here is the South Bay's best champagne brunch, a beautiful place to eat with daily sunset specials, outdoor harborside patio dining. It's called Portsacall Waterfront Dining. And if you haven't eaten here yet, or eaten there yet, we're practically here, it's wonderful. And Jamie Wilson runs the joint over there. He's just a great guy. And if he's there in the bar, he'll sit down with you and talk. He's just the most affable guy you'll ever meet. And they have happy hour every weekday from 3 to 7. If you need reservations and directions, go to portsocalldining.com or go ahead and call them, 310-833-3553. Tell them Phil Hewlett said to call, and they'll say, who? I don't think the reception lady knows me.
Why don't you, when we're done, go introduce yourself, and then when that does happen...
Yeah, then they won't say who. They'll say, oh, right to the front, sir.
Yes.
All right, let's talk about how technology is getting a little out of hand because we're not paying attention. Joining us now is the co-founder of Wired magazine, a visionary in the world of technology, and the author of the New York Times best-selling book, now in paperback, The Inevitable, Understanding the 12 Technological Forces That Will Shape Our Future. Kevin Kelly, it's my privilege, rather, to speak with you, sir.
Hey, it's so great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, just a pleasure. Now, in your book, you talk about the technological trends in motion now, which overlap and are codependent of one another, which could have serious consequences in the not-too-distant future. And I think rather than just give it all away, because I believe reading your book is essential, let's have a conversation about where things are going and why we should pay a little more attention to technology and who's driving the bus. And I think some of these trends will come to the fore. Sound good to you?
Perfect.
All right. Have we, as a society, gotten way too comfortable accepting the benefits of technology while not even thinking about the trade-offs we're making?
You know, I think it's kind of the opposite right now. I think that we're all very, very sensitive to how everything could go bad and how the world could fall apart and how technology takes over our lives. And it's becoming harder to imagine a world 50 years from now with tons more technology that we actually wanted to live in. And so I think we've become quite allergic to the future these days, partly because Hollywood has become so good at telling stories and dystopias make a much better story that most of the pictures we have of the future in our head on this planet are all futures that we don't want to have any part of. Actually trying to see a real optimistic view of the future is now very scarce.
All right. So that actually might be a good thing, considering some of the thoughts I have about technology in the future. But in the meantime, we are addicted to a bunch of things, more convenience, more instant gratification, more immersive experiences. And there are a bunch of people who are ready to hand that to us. So doesn't that kind of trump any dread we have of the potential consequences?
Right. So in a certain sense, there's a fear of the long term future, but there's this immediate grasping of like, give me the new stuff right now without waiting. And I think you're right that there seems to be this huge appetite for novelty, for the newest thing. People following Apple announcements, and they can't seem to wait, or they will wait long lines to get this stuff. And I think that's an indication that, in fact, people make a calculation about these things and understand that there are a lot of negatives, but they still, in the end, decide that the benefits that they're getting are outweighing whatever the costs are. And that's particularly true in the social media, where the costs are kind of a surrendering of our privacy, our transparency. So the way that I kind of make that formula, that equation, is that to get maximum personalization requires kind of maximum transparency. So in order to serve up the kind of the really personal service, you kind of have to know something about that person that you're serving to. And to really, really maximize the personalization, you have to maximize the knowledge you have about that. So we consumers are kind of surrendering everything about us in order so that we can be given personal service. And if we decide that we don't want that personal service, that we'll be content with a generic being treated as a number, then we can be unknown, we can be hidden. But it turns out that when we have a choice, when we give the choice in technology to get either maximum personalization or maximum privacy, people are pushing the lever all the way over to maximum transparency in order to get maximum personalization. And nobody expected that, but that seems to be what's happening.
Yeah, that is interesting, because you don't necessarily feel your privacy going out the window.
Right. But what you do feel is that, well, people are paying attention to me, and I'm getting personal recommendations on Amazon and personal recommendations on Netflix. And that's because we have surrendered a certain amount of capacity. We've become more transparent to them. And the surprise has been how eager we have been in general to surrender that in order to get some benefits.
Yeah. And talk about personal attention. I mean, we have these little devices that we sit on a table right now, and we ask them to order us some pizza. But the move to have humanoid robots tending to our every need, and I do mean every need, and I've been saying on this show for a long time that in my lifetime, I'll see self-aware, artificially intelligent robots rise up and enslave humankind. How far down the road are we on that?
I think we're only one step of the way. All the recent progress in AI in the last couple of years has sparked a lot of the hype around this, has come from technology that has really mastered only one of the types of thinking in our brain, and that's the perception. So it can follow a map, it can steer itself, it can recognize images, it can recognize voice, it can do all these things. But that's only one part of what makes us intelligent. We have many other types and modes of thinking that we haven't been able to do yet artificially, like deductive reasoning, symbolic reasoning, common sense, stuff like that. So we've taken a giant step forward, but it's only one step. And then the other steps are still to be done. And then there's the issue of the energy needed to have a mobile humanoid robot. So right now, the human body is incredibly efficient. We're only a quarter horsepower, and our supercomputer brains run on 100 watts. There's no machine that comes close to that kind of efficiency, which means that the battery energy requirements for a mechanical humanoid is like you need almost to put the power of a bomb inside the thing to make it run for 8 hours, or even 5 hours, or even 2 hours by itself. So I think most of the AI robotic things have wheels, and they run around because they're so heavy, because the energy costs are so high. So I think we're a ways away from having the robot running around, but I think we're a lot closer to having an AI on the net, on the web, or something plugged in and connected, like the thing sitting on your table. And so I think you'll be having a conversation with a human-like thing long, long before we have one running around killing us, and overtaking us.
Yeah, right. I know I enjoyed it. I'm curious, a guy like you who's immersed and surrounded in all that is technology and thinking deeply about it, but did you also enjoy the movie Ex Machina?
I did. And if you have a moment, the reason was because I don't believe in this myth of the lone mad genius who's devising all this technology by themselves. I find most people have trouble keeping more than two machines going, and the idea of having experimental technology like the Tony Stark character in Iron Man or the Batman cave is just totally unreasonable, because you need armies of people to make this. And so this idea so there are other aspects of the film that didn't work for me, but the common trope of having kind of a lone genius or this technology by itself without tons and tons and tons of other people involved never sits well with me, and that kind of ruined it.
Yeah, all right, that's good. Well, at least there's something good to say there about the future of employment. Another thing I've been saying for a long time is, please, whatever you do, don't accept the chip. But folks continue to be lured into having a computer chip placed under their skin for various reasons or elsewhere in their body to have things like convenience or instant gratification or perhaps some medical benefit. But there's another addiction out there, and it's the need for power and control, whether it's government or companies or rogue actors. And I don't know about you, but I really don't want any of those people controlling my experience and by way of that controlling me. Am I right to be concerned about this?
Yes, absolutely. And one of the things that we're discovering with the degree in which we immerse ourselves and let ourselves be influenced or have our attention being driven by others is the ability to actually nudge us or even manipulate us in certain directions that we're not even aware of, meaning that they out there may know more about us than we kind of know about ourselves, and therefore can use that knowledge to some advantage or to their advantage. And so that only speaks to me of the necessity of having kind of covalence, meaning that I want to have access to the information that others know about me. It should go both ways, and that I want to have some control over that, and I want to get some benefit from it. So we talked about the benefits, but there's also this idea that we should have more of a knowledge and more of access to the information about us so that at least we can understand ourselves as good as the other people who are tracking us do. And the fear is that we could be controlled without really being aware of it. And so I think part of that for me is continued transparency and disclosure about what information there is about me, and that is shared back with me, and I have some ability to control it and correct it.
Yeah, gotcha. Hey, when do we start seeing a rise in virtual reality crime? You know, people strap on their goggles and they're instantly vulnerable if bad guys want to take stuff or do harm.
Yeah, my experience in VRs, which I've had since 1989 when I first was immersed in the first VR worlds back then, is that it's going to be a very, very long time before we can't tell the difference. And I think in general, the rule of thumb is that if the difference makes a difference to you, if you care about it, you'll be able to find out. Many times we may not be able to tell whether like the voice that we're talking to, is it really a human or not? That's not that far off. But if we do care about whether it's a human or not, we'll be able to, there'll be ways to tell. But many times if I'm trying to do, you know, some kind of help desk, I don't really care. In fact, maybe the AI version of it may actually be better, more helpful than a human. If I do care, there'll be ways to tell. And the same with VR. If we really care about whether this world or thing is real or not, there'll be ways to tell.
Yeah.
But many times we won't really care. And so to the issue of crime or bad things happening, there's no end to ways in which we can use technology to harm or to weaponize it. And there's no stopping it. So I would imagine as soon as there's VR worlds, there'll be crime and fraud and other ways that people will undermine it. But that's not going to stop the fact that the advantages of that new world will outweigh whatever new dangers there are. So the people will be very creative in ways to subvert VR and use it against you. But we'll figure out ways to make people aware, you know, police, whatever it is. But the virtues are going to outweigh those vices.
What is your overarching message for society as we look ahead to all the possibilities technology provides us?
So I would say a couple of things. I think that we really should acknowledge the reality of progress that on average, globally, technology is improving our lives. Despite all the many new problems it generates, it does in the net gain make our lives a little tiny bit better each year on average. And with that in mind, I think that the message of the book is to try and encourage people to embrace these new technologies that are coming, even though they seem scary, to try and encourage people to use them, try them out, not to prohibit them or outlaw them or dismiss them without trying them, because it's only through using them, that we get to steer them. It's only by engagement with this new technology, whether it's artificial intelligence or virtual reality or tracking this and that, that we can actually alter its character. We can't alter it if we prohibit or outlaw them or refuse them. And so I'm preaching a message of engagement with these new things and give them a try, use them to some extent, and it's through use that we can actually try and steer them.
Very good. Now I can feel more comfortable looking forward to the future. Thanks to you. The book is called The Inevitable, Understanding the 12 Technological Forces That Will Shape Our Future. It's in the store on our website. Visit kk.org to keep up with Kevin Kelly. Just spectacular of you to spend some time with us, sir. Thank you so much.
Hey, it's really been great. I really appreciate your fantastic questions.
All right. And he's on Twitter as well, at Kevin, then the number 2, Kelly. Kevin 2 Kelly, if you want to follow him there. So, great book. I do recommend it. Coming up in a little bit on the program, Manny the Movie Guy is going to review The Mummy, and is it curtains for Tom Cruise?
He's supposed to be remaking Top Gun, too. Did you see that?
Tom Cruise, he's in Top Gun as well?
That's what they're talking about. Val Kilmer said, I'm in. Isn't he kind of chubby now?
Val Kilmer?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know what? You're a Hollywood pretty boy. You can hire some guys to get you back in shape right away.
Yeah, that's true.
Can't you? Hey, by the way, visit our website, philhewlettandfriends.com, and click on any button that says subscribe. Or if you go to the How to Listen page, you can pick your poison. If it's iTunes or Google Play or Stitcher or TuneIn or whatever it is that you use, we're everywhere. Just any kind of app that listens to podcasts, search my name, Phil Hewlett, you'll find it, then subscribe. Then you'll never miss a show. And you'll never miss Manny the Movie Guy or some of the big people that we interview, like you just heard, Kevin Kelly. So thanks for that. So I'm Phil. Hi, again. With me today in the studio is Terry Ray Elmer. And joining us from Colorado Springs is KOAA TV sports anchor dude, Matt Pritchard.
Yes.
And so some time ago, there was a controversy, T-Ray, on the subway system in New York about the way men prefer to sit when they're on the subway, and it was making some people upset. What do they call it?
Man spreading.
Ah. Can you buy that in a jar?
Yeah, I don't think so. And it's usually, I know you've done it, to sit with your legs wide apart and your arms folded in front of you, taking up two spaces in the seat.
Well, there's a reason for that.
So now, along with signs for no smoking or no littering, commuters in Madrid will soon see a new sign that says no man spreading.
In Spanish?
Uh-huh.
What's it called in Spanish?
I didn't see the sign.
That's a good question.
No, it's just a guy with the
Oh, it's the universal picture?
Yes, but it's the guy with his hands and his legs spread apart.
Oh,
it's got a big X in it.
That is just waiting for people with Sharpies.
See?
Right, it went away. You touched your screen.
Shoot.
And you just lost your story. But no, isn't that, I mean, it's perfect. If I was a kid and I had a Sharpie, I would be drawing stuff on that right away. Because it looks like he's getting ready to play with himself, honestly.
Yeah. So they're going to put the signs on all the buses asking men to keep to one seat and one seat only. And the new sign shows a cartoon guy with his legs spread sitting on a metro seat with a giant X signaling that it is unacceptable. The Madrid Municipal Transport Company says that the mission is to remind people of the need to keep a civil behavior and respect the space of everyone on the bus.
Regardless of how long the ride is.
Exactly. It doesn't matter. No. After 10 minutes, you don't get to say, okay, I'm done now. I get to spread out.
Yeah.
No.
Or at least you have to adjust a little bit. I mean, it's rough being a guy in that respect.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. You know, unless you're standing, then it's not an issue. But sitting down, you know, legs together.
You need a little room.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Got to let those things, you know, get
let it breathe.
Space.
Stop it.
Let it breathe. Exactly. Yeah.
Hey, we were talking about the hashtag lady for the weddings, and Matt, you did that, but Twitter is such a powerful place.
It is.
And we're all on some level in the news business, we three, and so people were just going nuts about news on Twitter. What was the deal with that?
There's a guy named Austin Steinmetz. He's the one who started this whole thing.
He tweeted out, and this is why you got to make sure you check everything that you read, make sure it's true, but he tweeted out that it took him 19 years to figure out the news stands for notable events, weather, and sports.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't. That's not true at all. But it got 30,000 retweets and 961 replies, and a bunch of people were like, wow, I learned something today. Now, you know, this, that's what news stands for. And I mean, I'll admit it's witty, and it's definitely a great use of that acronym. But
it's not true.
But it's not true. That's not the case. And so a lot of people were retorting back to the people that were saying that they learned something like
fake news.
Yeah, no, exactly.
It's a word. It's just a word is what it is with a definition.
Exactly. It's news because that is what is new today. But I got to give him credit. Notable events, weather, and sports. I mean, he's covering it. I mean, yeah.
I have a new acronym for him. Not even worthy of sharing.
Is that what you were sitting over in the corner coming up with here a while ago?
I had to wipe my brow. I was really working hard on it.
I was working on an acronym too. The S was throwing me. The S was the tough part.
Yeah.
What'd you come up with?
Something. I wanted to start off with like nonsense. Nonsense events with something. But, you know, I mean, because a lot of the times the stuff you cover in news on a slow news day could definitely be called nonsense.
Yeah, you should see some of those stories. Sunday Night News in Palm Springs. Oh, boy.
Ooh.
I can't. Yeah.
Hey, Palm Springs, that's a good opportunity for us because now it's time to see what the movie companies have in store for you at your local Cineplex.
Boom.
Joining us now is a man who's so wrapped up in his work he doesn't have time to call his mummy. KMIR-TV Palm Springs movie reviewer, Manny the Movie Guy.
I always call my mummy.
I know you do. But Manny, you are wrapped up in your work.
But Manny, you're not on Sunday nights, right?
Yes, exactly.
Good. Honestly,
any other day.
So I'm curious, Manny, this Tom Cruise in the reboot of The Mummy, is this the beginning of the end of his movie career?
Tom Cruise tries to reinvigorate this dead franchise. Honestly, it's a franchise that should really just remain dead.
Mummified and in a sarcophagus somewhere.
No amount of star power can save this lackluster entry into what Universal Pictures, they're calling this part of the dark universe, meaning the studio wants to connect all the movie monsters like The Mummy, Dracula, The Werewolf, etc., just like the Marvel Universe or the DC Comics Universe. You know, they're banking on this film to make lots of money. But, you know, in this new The Mummy, for instance, the Jekyll and Hyde character even shows up in the form of the miscast Russell Crowe. And the plot, if you've seen the first Mummy and the Brendan Fraser Mummies, I mean, the Mummy movies, the plot is pretty much the same, but instead we have Tom Cruise, he's a treasure hunter, and the setting is present-day Iraq. He and his team accidentally discovered a tomb of Princess Amunet buried alive with flesh-eating scarabs. And you know what happens then?
Flesh-eating what?
Scarabs.
The mayhem.
Oh, bugs.
Flesh-eating scarabs.
Bugs?
They're like beetles. But
okay.
They
crawl
were
on your skin, straight up to your brain.
Crabs of the desert.
If I remember right.
Crabs of the desert.
Right? I you know what happens. Next, the mayhem of the mummy ensues.
And so Tom Cruise goes to the desert and he gets crabs. Is that what
you're
saying?
Biggest crime of the film for me is it takes itself so seriously. I mean, gone are the fun and campy jokes we love with the Brendan Fraser mummy movies. And the thrills we expect of a film like this, they're gone as well.
Aww.
What we have is a lifeless movie that has good enough special effects. I mean, come on, it's with a price tag of $125 million. I mean, what can we expect, right?
Whoa, they had to pay for all that star power.
Yeah, but if you're looking for pure popcorn fun, forget this. You know, stick with Wonder Woman.
I saw the trailer. It looks scary.
But they put the best on all the scary stuff. I mean, on all the trailers, you know. That's pretty much it. It's true. I mean, you know, if you watch the trailer, all the best parts are in the trailer.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Now,
sorry, Tom Cruise. I still love you.
Oh, all right. Hey, is he making Top Gun 2? Is that
that's what he admitted to the on the press tour of The Mummy. He revealed that he's. But you know what? Though they've been wanting to make Top Gun 2 for ever since I remember. You know, it's gone through so many incarnations, but now
is it going to be about retired pilots?
Yeah. You know, well, we just can't take our breath away from the movie, I guess.
All right. Now, people cannot get enough movies about a dog, can they?
Oh, yes.
And so is that what Megan Levy is about? Is it a dog genre movie?
It is a dog genre movie, but it's really more than that. I mean, it's the bond between humans and dogs is at the heart of this film. Really, what would you do for the one you love? Megan Levy did the ultimate. This one is based on a true story. Kate Mara plays a title role. The film shows the undying bond between a young Marine corporal and her military dog named Rex. And you know what's great about this film is this is from director Gabriella Cowperthwaite. She gave us, I don't know if you guys saw the documentary Blackfish about the mistreatment of captive killer whales. Yeah, CNN, sure. I think, showed that. She came from that genre. She came from the documentary genre. So, I mean, she knows how to take care of characters and story, and that's what we get here. She takes us on a journey that will make you cry with tears of joy. And there's no... You know, like sometimes you cry in a movie and you're like, "What? Why the heck did I cry?" I mean, it's this one, there's no guilty feeling whatsoever. You're just taken over by the story. And on a personal note, when I saw Megan Levy, my own dog was battling cancer. So, I mean, it was more cathartic for me.
Oh, you know, man.
You will thank your furry friend after watching this movie. It's a patriotic and very moving love story. I recommend Megan Levy.
Oh, good. We got out of two movies, one worth seeing. Now, there's a third movie, and I know you love the horror films, and this one's called It Comes at Night.
Oh, dear.
Well, exactly. Thank you. I do love the horror, the terror genre. That's why when I saw The Mummy, I'm like, I wasn't even scared. This one, though, if you want terror, look no further than It Comes at Night. Like the characters, you will be terrified with this brilliant movie. That challenges your notion of survival. You know, on the surface, it's a zombie movie, right? It's a genre film. There's a deadly virus going around, and one man played with conviction by Joel Edgerton is determined to protect his family at all costs. This is from writer-director Trey Edward Schultz, who gave us the fantastic movie called Krisha back in 2015. That one examines, that movie Krisha examines the horrors of drug addiction, but it's still about humanity's dark impulses. Now, those dark impulses are displayed frighteningly in It Comes at Night. So this one is creepy and smart. It's a thinking man's thriller that goes deep in the heart of fear. And you would enjoy this film.
And did it scare you?
Oh, it scared the crap out of me.
And did you scream like a little girl?
Yes, of course. The Mummy, ignore it.
Yeah, we played your little scream there that while you were telling us that you gave it 4.5 kisses.
I love screaming like a little girl. That means it's a good movie, or it's a good scary movie.
Yes. All right, let's see. Did I have any... Bruce Willis news I wanted to ask you about.
Well, we're talking about remakes.
Remakes. Apparently, he's going to step into and channel Charles Bronson and do. Did you hear about this? He's going to remake Death Wish.
No, I haven't heard that. Really?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, you know, I mean, those Die Hard movies are really copycats of old Charles Bronson movies. So yeah. There you go. He's in the same territory.
So Death Wish came out in 1974. It had a $3 million budget, and it made $22 million, which was a big success back then.
Back then, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. You would enjoy it. But anyway, next weekend it's Cars 3. And speaking of remake, by the way, I'm excited to watch The Beguiled. I'm going to see it tonight. The Beguiled is a remake of a lesser seen 1971 movie starring Clint Eastwood.
Oh.
I can't wait to see that film.
And who's in it?
Coppola, Nicole Kidman, Colin Farrell. Sofia Coppola is only the second woman to win Best Director at the Cannes Film Festival, you know, since the 1940s or something.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's awesome. I can't wait for that.
Wow.
Good for
my adventure this week. And Cars 3.
Yes, okay. We'll talk about that next week. And thanks for the heads up. And everybody, go to MannyTheMovieGuy.com and check out Manny's interviews with the celebrities out there. And who's leading the pack right now in terms
right
of interest?
Now I have Megan Levy in there. So I interviewed Kate Mara, the director. Common as well. So
Common. All right. That's good. Note to rappers. If you want to have
success beyond two or three songs that play on the radio for a couple of weeks. Become an actor.
Oh, right, there you go. Exactly. I thought you were going to say just have one name.
Yeah, right. Well, that helps, too.
That, too.
All right, Manny, enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, you guys. Have a great weekend.
You know, he's talking about the dog movie. And what was the dog movie that was just out a couple of months ago where the dog...
Dog's Purpose, right?
A Dog's Purpose, yeah. Right. And I said, I kind of like to see that. And my husband goes, you know I hate movies where the pets die. And I go, this one, the pet dies like 10 times.
Oh, my.
We didn't see that movie, I'm just saying.
All right. Well, there's no better time than right now to play Somebody Died, Try Not to Laugh. Okay.
Can't wait.
No, it's true.
It's a 70-year-old guy. He's a farmer. He's a well-to-do farmer. He was crushed to death by his tractor.
Yeah, that happens.
Driven by his dog.
Not good.
No. Matt, no. I can't see your face because you're in Colorado Springs, but how'd you do, bud?
It's just shameful. That's not the way anybody wants to go.
And exactly. And that's like some people's nightmare. A guy I used to work with in radio, he was driving down the freeway with his wife.
Yeah.
And the car in front of them, the surfboard flew off.
Yeah.
And went flying through the freeway lanes. And he said what passed through his mind was his obituary, local radio host dies after being hit by
surfboard.
Impaled by surfboard.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, strange things happen. It's a freak accident. Now, he led a wonderful, long life, but he didn't die instantly either. He had a heart attack, and paramedics came, and they couldn't revive him.
So many questions, though. How did the dog get on the tractor?
Oh, that's easy.
Really?
Yeah.
Dogs do that all the time.
Yeah.
And then they step inadvertently on the
gas.
On the gas.
Hit the ignition.
Oh, yeah.
Look at me.
Off
here I
go.
Come. Are you proud of me?
Yeah.
Gosh.
Remember the guy that fell in the tuna cooker?
Oh, yeah.
See? Same thing.
Right.
Did you laugh? Yes, you did.
A little bit, yeah. But you know what? There are all kinds of things that we use, industrial devices that we use. For instance, there are these can crushers, but they crush 50-gallon barrels.
Uh-huh.
And
well, the car crushers, too, right?
Yeah. But those barrel things, they're the spinning teeth on the inside. You throw this metal barrel in there, and it just, in like an instant, it eats it up and crushes it into nothing. And it's wide open. And the guys who work in these factories, they basically, you know, the flatbed truck comes up with the barrels. You get on the truck, and you push them into the deal there. And you're standing over it, you know, like one wrong move, right?
Well, that was the Saddam Hussein thing. When we first found out about it, he was putting people in the wood chippers.
Oh.
It's like,
oh
my gosh. Head first or feet first? Think about it.
Did he learn that from Hollywood? Did he watch Fargo?
Oh, that I forgot about that.
Was that an uncomfortable scene to watch?
I'd say head first.
See, he's been thinking about it. He's been sitting there for 30 seconds
just
thinking.
And you
make
get,
it,
you know, and
get it over with.
There's so many things that you work in that you can get your hair stuck in, too. And then
that happens to people.
The hair gets pulled in, and then the next thing, your face gets mauled.
Or you get scalped.
And this is why I wonder about, you know, guys with long hair. They're starting to try to get all fashionable, you know, and wear like the gentleman bun, right? I mean, I'm not sure I like that fashion.
Nice segue, Phil. That was awesome. They are. Real. You've seen the guys at the gym with the man bun.
Yeah.
It's like, you know how some fad comes along and some person you know, it makes them crazy.
And I want to knock it off of there with a baseball bat.
My sister is just nuts about man buns. She's like, I can't stand it. Well, they've had them on sale and like they sell them in the women's department, you know, at the drugstore.
Clip-ons?
Yeah, because you just pull your hair up like this and then you got the
thing. Pull your own hair up.
Yeah, exactly. But now they have them for men. And Groupon put up an offer for a $9.99 clip-on man bun.
$9.99.
This attachable and equally important detachable man bun lets you blend in with your surroundings, putting it on when you smell fair trade coffee or hear a banjo, and taking it off when someone utters the word bro. So there you go. Yeah. On Groupon, $9.99.
There is a fabulous YouTube video of a guy that runs around cutting off people's man buns.
I saw that.
Oh. It's fabulous. Just running around with a pair of scissors to restaurants, cutting off guys' man buns. He's the hero that we need, I think, is what is the lesson from that video.
What's worse than just the man bun is the man bun in combination with the ZZ Top beard.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The Civil War beard.
Well, what's even worse is the man bun with the ZZ Top beard, and the ZZ Top beard has, like, sections in it, like it's braided down the middle. I mean, so you've got, I mean, that's just the full combo going on up top.
Yeah, right. But it's easier to get the soup out if the beard is braided, right?
It is true. And you're saving some for later. So, you know, it's economically smart.
All right. Matt, tell me, please, about this very lucky Uber driver who probably made more money than he ever expected he would make.
He really did. The story's going around, and it's huge news in the sports world. The Buffalo Bills cornerback Sharice White, he had gone into Chicago, and he was on his way to Buffalo for an optional team workout with the Bills, and he couldn't get a flight there, so he booked an Uber to drive him from Chicago O'Hare Airport all the way to Buffalo, and the final. Receipt was $932.
Whoa.
500 and some odd miles later. And that Uber driver got a big tip. Wow. I guess the actual route was $600, but Sharice gave him a $300 tip.
Sweet.
On top of it.
You could do it
in the app.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. I thought Lyft was the one in the app. I guess the Uber one. I think it's just cash.
Is
if
it?
You have it on you,
well,
I think.
Let's just look.
Well, yeah. You have your Uber app?
Yeah, I do.
You're going to look at it now?
Yeah, I am.
All right.
And I haven't gotten on the Uber thing yet.
I have the app, and I have yet to take an Uber.
Neither have I. I don't know. I don't trust it just yet.
Oh, all right. And then there are other competitors coming out. By the time I get around to using an Uber, there will be 15 different companies doing it.
Yes, exactly. Find the best one.
Hey, that's it for the part one of episode 321. And I want you to stick around for part two, meaning that this part of the episode is going to end, and then I want you to start listening to the second part. You'll see. It's very easy. In your app or on our website, philhewlettandfriends.com. In the next hour, we're going to talk, or in part two, we're going to talk to our travel guy, Gary Warner. And considering the terror attacks in London and Manchester, he says you actually should take a trip to Britain right now. He'll explain why in part two of Phil Hewlett and Friends.